Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy and direct to all of you here in our world, this is Four Center Presents Other Center. I'm Ken Napsok, trying to find the right way to introduce these shows now.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I can barely keep track of my own name, so I think you're doing a good job.
Not that From the Center of the Galaxy has any, you know, it's not bad to say. What am I? I'm just doing my head.
It sounds good. That's why we've said it for 9 years.
9 years. Here's what we're doing today, folks. We're doing another one of our life ranked episodes. Yes, we love ranking space saga. I'm afraid to even say what it is anymore, but that's silly. Star Wars. Here's the thing, out of support for the strikes, as you all know, we've been doing this kind of content under the Other Center banner, and it's been a lot of fun. Not that you all don't love us talking about Star Wars, but you guys really loved us talking about food.
Yeah, we need to do Chips and Salsa Center and far less popular Clam Chowder Center, but I think that's really like where we're headed.
Yeah. Shout out to Dan from Food in My Beard who wanted to share his clam chowder nacho recipe in our Discord. Here's the thing, like almost to the point, Joseph, where I had to make sure I didn't get offended that more Facebook interaction, Instagram interaction, Twitter interaction, but our Discord. Over a week after the episode, I'll go back into the other center category in our Discord, and there's 22 new notifications that I haven't got to yet. With everyone, not even debating, having this wonderful four center like thematic discussion of food, sharing foods from across. You got our buddy Mark Canope and Ilka sharing local delicacies from the Netherlands and beyond. And, you know, and then you got people like you and me and Jen going, well, burritos, you know, it's just, it's been amazing. And in that spirit, we're going to do that today with video games. Oh,
yeah.
Joseph, you wanted to discuss this. This was on your list. I love this idea. Can I just ask you, what drew you to this?
I think when I was trying to come up with ideas, is what are things that we both love that we've talked about? We've definitely talked about a love of Star Wars video games. Other video games certainly creep in, and I keep being interested in those topics that creep in. But also, my nephew was showing me a mobile video game about murder. And it made me think about, yeah, God, what are the video games I've loved? And I want to own it from the top. I was a gamer to me was like, that was a part of who I was. Mm-hmm. Then that term, it took some turns.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, around 2013, 2014, 2015, with some events on the internet that you can Google, Gamergate. But also just, I got to a point where I love video games, been playing them since, got to go to the pizza parlor and get a quarter from his Pac-Man days. All the way up until really I moved to Los Angeles, that it'd be a huge part of my life. And I just found like, if I want to pursue the things I want to pursue, I get way too obsessive and I can't put them down when I start. So total honesty, I'm not gaming a ton now. And my list is very frozen in time, put it that way. But I still love them and I still want to share them and I still want to share the love of them.
Hey, look, I got a few modern ones on my list here. It's going to be an interesting discussion. Now I'm with you. You and I, born in the 70s, raised in the 80s. Right at the perfect time for video games to explode. Was there games before of electronic nature? Yes, but Pong comes along, which I did have Pong at one point. We had a hook up on our TV. The explosion of that, Commodore 64, which will come up in our conversation. Super Nintendo, the Nintendo. I should start there. We were right there. And it's one of those things where I think occasionally I still have... like I'll be playing a game or something and I'll think to myself, aren't I too old for this? No, I'm not. We've never been this far with it, right? We don't know. We're in this, gaming might've been considered a quote kids thing in the 80s, but so were the things that we talk about on our podcast and celebrate and love. There were kids things that also meant we grew up and now those things grew up with us. It is who we are. It's part of our life. And I now I tell myself, no, you want to relax for an hour playing a video game? That's how you relax, unless you get into the game, and that's a different discussion. But so I'm with you. It's here to stay. It's part of our lives, and that's why it's so fun to discuss.
Yeah, and I really agree with you. And it's just a trajectory of many art forms and certainly any form of leisure. I believe it was in Edinburgh at the Scottish Writers Museum, or maybe the Edinburgh Writers Museum. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But I believe it was, I can't remember the author's name, a famous author. I don't want to get their name wrong, but a famous oldie time author. there was a chessboard of another author, and there was a quote from this author from like the 1700s saying, "Chess, what a sad waste of brains." And it was just like that. So it is now, so it has always been kind of thing of like, chess is so elevated and it has been our entire lives. That's what, you know, brilliant James Bond villains do, elevate, you know, it's classy and the highest, you know, form of gaming, you know, but the idea that when it was new, it's like, those, you know, drugged out chess heads can't stop with their stupid checkmating. What is the world coming to? Remember that it's always been like that. And we've been seen in our lifetime video games from that to like, now they are like the huge industry and much more respect and, you know, sports level competitions taken seriously and, you know, mm-hmm. all of it.
Sports level performance or sport or top level performances from actors. Yeah. And, yeah, it's so funny. Yeah. What will be again? I'd love to, the like 1600s equivalent of a podcast, like a town forum of like, all these kids are playing cornhole. What are they doing? Cornhole. You know, it's all the same. It's all the same.
Yeah, it's all the same. So yeah, it has changed a lot. And I did have a big video game resurgence thanks to the podcast, getting the PlayStation 4 and spending a lot of glorious time on Battlefront 2. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think it's only saving grace is that it was, you know, I would be able to put it down after a couple hours because I was just playing online, playing those, not like the whole open world, like the open world, that's where like I'm in trouble.
Indeed. Well, we're gonna get into our list here. We each have five choices. On this show, we're trying to keep we don't want to 2.5 hour episodes with the honorable mentions taking up 90 minutes, so we're gonna, you know, other games might pop up off our list, but the official honorable mention section is kind of on hold right now. We work our way 5-1. And a small note here, neither of us have included Star Wars titles, one in keeping with the support of the strikes and the spirit of that, but also quite frankly, that's a bigger discussion that I'd love to just be able to get into when the time is right again. Mm-hmm. And especially with some of the new titles coming out and the titles in recent years. So that's part of the reason for it. We apologize for that, but we've mentioned them before and we'll mention them again, but we'll get to that when we get to that. But that is all the caveats that we can give, Joseph. Let's go into our favorite video games, working 5-1. And we kick this off with your number five.
My number five is a video game that some people are sick of hearing about, but it's my truth, and it is Ocarina of Time, the great Legend of Zelda video game from the N64. Now, I could have included the original Legend of Zelda for the NES. This huge deal to get the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System. Both my brother and I had an awful year at school, and we were done with school, and I think my parents scraped because we didn't have money to get the NES. And then my grandma bought me the original Legend of Zelda, which people don't know, it was a gold cartridge, which was like, it seemed like actual gold to me. So I played that and I loved it. And I didn't have the Nintendo Power magazine or the right friends, so I got to the end and I couldn't figure out how to beat Ganon. So I'd never completed that. And then I drifted away from those games. Then, you know, I've got a Nintendo 64. Ocarina of Time comes out and people are telling me like how amazing it is. And I'm like, oh, I'm an old Legend of Zelda fan. I gotta try this out and watch other people play it a little bit and think, it's kind of weird to just watch other people play a video game. Nobody's ever going to want to do that.
No one's going to have a whole industry on Twitching. What? What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. There's one night in particular where a bunch of us wanted to hang out. My friend was like, fine, but you're going to watch me play Ocarina of Time. And we ordered pizza and we ordered beer. And I remember and watched someone else play a video game. And I was like, this is just the laziest, most disengaged evening I've ever had. I was foolish. I was experiencing the future. but so then I eventually got Ocarina of Time myself. And even back then, for me, when I bought it, it was 2002. So it was a little while after it came out because I was afraid of it back then. Mm-hmm. And to me, there are a bunch of other games. I kept playing them up through, Breath of the Wild, which I started but didn't get a chance to finish. And I love all of them, but Ocarina of Time for me was the first time where this idea of the kind of the fantasy world, you're this such a fantasy setup of you're the hero that nobody expects from a small village, and you go around gathering your strength and gathering your bravery. But Ocarina of Time, it was the 3D experience, which is still new. It was the open world of like, you can just go around and there might be something over that hill. It's not even a main part of the game, but somebody might just ask you for help and then you could go do some weird help with them. Weird side mission. But more than anything, it was the utter success of the emotion. that Ocarina of Time just it's not fully spoken dialogue. Like Link will gasp and there's an audio for like ha, which is really funny. But then it'll be text based. But it's the classics of storytelling. My favorite of the characters that you help, the groups, is the Gorons, the rock people. Mm. And they're some of it is the initial writing, some of it is the kind of the fun cultural translation from Japanese. But you know, this isn't even in Ocarina of Time, it's in Majora's Mask, but it's the perfect example. There's a Goron who's in a part of the landscape that has been devastated, and there's supposed to be like water flowing, but the Goron can't get down until you go to the temple and you fix things and the land becomes beautiful again. And the Goron yells at you and you look up and the Goron says, "I'm sorry to speak to you from such a high place, but I am trapped." And the reason for this long monologue, I apologize, is the power of Ocarina of Time was, it's the first time that I really deeply experienced, I don't want to go into that temple and fix this area of the map because it's the next thing to do in the video game and I want to feel like a badass. It was, I can't go to the sleep because I need to help the Gorons because it was emotional. It was about the story.
Yeah.
They let you, you know, you put in your name. I put in my initials of Joseph Aaron Scrimshaw. So it was JAS of Jazz. And like, please, Jazz, can you help us? Please, Jazz, hero of time, can you help us? And I was like, I can't go to bed. They need me. That was the power of Ocarina of Time for me.
And that, I think that kind of power is going to come up here in our conversations a lot, because this is the blessing and maybe the curse of video games of pulling you into these worlds that you've either watched on TV or read about or wanted to be part of, and you've really, really feel it. I keep coming back to that, and hearing you describe it, I get it. I Zelda missed me. Zelda's a weird thing because I didn't have a Nintendo. So all my friends were playing The Legend of Zelda, and I was like, but I've got the Commodore 64, which, by the way, I'm happy, as you'll see on this list. So I didn't play it. I didn't play the first game until the mid 90s. Cause I could. Now I borrowed my friend's system and I just was like, I think I missed this. So I've always been behind on Zelda. I know there's the big game now everyone's talking about it. So I'm fascinated by it. It's a wonderful world in this game. This is from 98, right? This is crazy.
Ocarina of Time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I feel as though I've missed it. So I love hearing you talk about it and all it means and how you can keep going back to this world. I'm blown away by that because I think, again, because I missed it, that colored my perspective on it, where a new Zelda game would come out and be like, they're still doing that? And yeah. I don't mean like a cynical a-hole, but it was just like, oh, I missed it. I love hearing you describe all of it. I kind of want to go back and experience this.
I think you would love it because I think the real emotional power of it is the simple fantasy story always of, you know, a darkness has spread across the land. It is very Lord of the Rings. It is very Sauron is here and Link is Frodo. But it's the way it's executed is the video game makes you enjoy the parts that are joyful and innocent and beautiful music and funny, charming characters. So then when you go to the parts of the map that have been violated, you want to set it right because of how beautiful it could be. And I think you'd really enjoy that.
Wow. Yeah. I have a 64. I have one set up in the living room.
lucky man. So that's my number five, Ocarina of Time.
That is a great way to start our list here. We're going to go to my number five. And if you know me or have heard me, you're probably surprised. You're not surprised that this next one's on the list, but you might be surprised that it's low on the list. And I'll try to explain that because maybe I don't even know myself. But my number five choice is the Show franchise. This is the MLB The Show, the baseball game. It's a sport game, and I'm a sport guy. I love sports. Used to play them badly, but that's part of the reason I love the game. So this is the entire franchise, but I played this morning while I was going over notes for the show. I had my MLB The Show franchise going. And here's the reason why I definitely had to include it. It's a game that dominates a lot of my time. But it is a game that kind of, for me, the way I play it, and I'm not alone in this, represents a lot of what you're talking about and a lot of what we'll be talking about time and time again, of the power to pull you in and the power of where it, for me, it stays with me. And I'll be going to bed thinking about, I got it. What do I got it. That poor guy in left field, he's slumping. and I can't trade them and I can't do anything about it. And so I don't just play the game. I play the franchise mode, and it is what it is. Your control of a team from top of the roster and the managers and coaches all the way down to the class A rookie ball kind of thing. And here's why it's so powerful for me beyond just the game. I became a baseball fan, fifth, sixth grade. A lot of it was my friends were doing it and I felt left. They were collecting baseball cards and I was collecting Star Wars cards and I wanted to feel part of it too. And then I really loved it. And it worked for me as a kid, but and I want to be a baseball player, but beyond that, and I'm confessing this, I don't know if this, you tell me if it's weird, Joseph. I'll try to make this short. So I used to, in my backyard, I used to act out like me as a major leaguer, right? I'd have a glove and a tennis ball and I'd catch a fly ball or I had a bat. And I was a lonely kid by myself, shy kid. No one's playing with me. I'm playing by myself in the backyard. And because of my imagination, the way it is, and again, I know I'm not alone in this, I would think, all right, what if my rookie year, I play and I hit 17 home runs and I drive in 75 runs. So I started writing that down. And then I was like, well, who else will be on the team with me? So I started writing that down. This is about sixth grade. So next, you know, I had a sheet of players who were on my team and I was keeping track of the stats. And I went the next year and I had this suddenly, before you know it, I in my room would write down an entire alternate Major League Baseball reality and act it out. And one of the reasons I would do this is I could never find a video game in which I could pour this into. Some of the big games at the time, Hardball, Bases Loaded, they had fake players. You couldn't really create the players. That started coming in later. And I was always searching for that. I have all this stuff in my imagination, entire rosters of players, and I don't have a place to put it. And it's this weird little thing I did, almost embarrassed about it because I just was talking to myself in my room, you know, and he couldn't have friends, couldn't even go play baseball in the park with real kids. He's playing by himself. All right. And then games started getting better. Video games started getting better. Franchise modes emerged, or you could change the name of a player. MLB The Show is what I used to do. I'm to the point now, if you turn, so you start with the real players, obviously, then they get older as the seasons progress and they retire, they go away and computer generated, you can change every name. I'm to the point now where I have generated 500 to 600 fake names in my MLB The Show. So I'm invested to them. So what you're talking about, I got to help Goran the Rock guy. There's times I'll demote someone to the minor leagues and I'm like, I feel bad for them. I can't do that to Jake Williams. He's had a long career. He's 3 home runs away from 500 home runs, and now he's playing a triple-A ball because he's 38 and he's getting older. And I feel bad.
And Jake Williams is real, right?
He's fake. I've made him up.
That's not you made it. This isn't one where you're going off of real players. This is them.
It's all created players,
right? And so you are a creator.
Yes.
Punishing your own creations.
I'm God. You think you're baseball? I am baseball.
Powerful. Powerful.
So when people, I'm in my 23rd year of my franchise mode, and this is when I restarted. I've played now since 2018 when I got back in MLB Show. I played 2009. I stopped. And this is one of the reasons why. Because it's just, you talk about a time suck, like, and a creative energy suck, but I need it. And it's been from when I was 11 or 12. I don't know what it is. I'm not the only one. I've talked to other people like, oh yeah, I used to create, you know, wiffle ball leagues. And so it's that energy. And so that's why I love MLB The Show, is it's allowed me to live out some dreams that I couldn't because I didn't have those skills. So I didn't pursue it to get better at it, or I didn't go, I thought maybe I could get a job as a baseball announcer. That didn't happen. Maybe I can get a job in management or so. It didn't happen, you know. And I have some friends who have pursued that and are doing well. And so it's to cut my conversation short before you and I spend an hour on my psychosis. That's why I'm not just playing baseball. I'm invested in these careers. And now I'm to the point now I have kids. I have some of my players have sons in the game. I have family trees, Joseph, in this game. And I get lost in it, as you would with Ocarina of Time or some other kind of world. And that's what I love it. And that's why it's my number 5 choice.
I think as we go on another center adventure, we need to put an asterisk on. That could be a longer episode. Like, I have a million things I want to ask you. This could be kind of like an obsessed episode where I interview just about MLB The Show. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it, and I got the idea that, yeah, it's a team building game, and I get that, but there's a lot of depth here. Yeah, I mean, I can relate to building not baseball teams, but writing up different superhero teams. What if these characters switched around? What kind of team they'd be? I also just feel like the motion of I made Jake Williams and now I have to punish him. That has some clear emotional power. But I think just the whole building a team, when I hear you describing it, it kind of it sounds like a creative process, and it reminds me of a creative process, like particularly with some of the filmmaking stuff. You're taking all these pieces and you have a dream that they'll work together, like this scene and this scene and the way they'll cut together. And even when we're shooting this most recent one, I had a vision in there a couple times. The DP, who was great, was like, don't you want to keep moving? And it's like, no, I'm going to cut right there. You know, I had a vision of how this image and this sound would work together. And there's just this like joy in this experiment, and you put all these pieces together, and then does it work the way I imagined it could? And that's what it sounds like to me when you're putting all these players together of like, I'm putting all these different pieces together to make a whole, and then will it sing the way it might in my imagination?
Yeah. Yeah. And the computer, I simulate a lot of games and the computer takes over or you know, that didn't work. And then it gets, it gets a real bummer, or there's success. It highlights why I love sports. The how do you put it all together? But also just being in that world. This is why I always I want a pod racing game where I can manage a pod race team.
I would love that, especially if you got to create the weirdos
and down to what droid you hire or everything like that. Like you'd be invested. It's investment. It is story. It is absolutely story. So that's why I do love sports games. They're not for everybody. Sports aren't for everybody. I love Madden. Madden, you can do this too. I used to do this with football, but baseball's always been a little closer to my heart. And that's why I just love it so much.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great one. That is a great number five. Like I said, I'm having a hard time moving on, but I'm going to stop myself. We can do a longer episode.
I also want to kind of fire up the game and play. So from that, we're going to go to your number four.
Okay, I'll make this quick so you can go play MLB the show. What was the character?
Jake
Williams?
Well, he's in the minor leagues. I just this morning traded for a left-hand reliever named Craig Moyer from the Yankees. I got fired by the Mets, so I'm running the Padres now, and we needed a lefty. It was a big deal because I had to give up a guy who helped win the World Series last year. Ah, tough morning, Justin. Tough morning.
Totally fantasy world. I got to get you back to that. So my number four is a video game that I don't think a ton of people played because it was – everything on my list is between, I believe, 1997 and 2010. Owning it. This one came out in June of 2002. In a time where things started to spread out to more of the systems, this was exclusive to GameCube. And it is a game called Eternal Darkness: Sanity's Requiem. right? Sounds very melodramatic. Yes. Did you play this?
No, I didn't, but I remember seeing it. I remember seeing it on the shelves.
Yeah, so it was, I'm a big fan. Asterisk, there's complicated things about him. And know it, happy to discuss it another time. The asterisk is there, but I'm a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft and the world of cosmic horror that he created. Famously difficult to adapt. And this is a video game that adapted the world of Lovecraft while also kind of filing off the serial number and avoiding any sort of legal entanglement. So like one of the big, dark, unknowable outer gods from beyond the stars isn't named Cthulhu, is named Chaturga. Like close enough. And there are a couple of direct nods of characters having, you know, the same name as they do in Lovecraft's actual fiction. But this is a game that absolutely captured what is fun about that kind of Lovecraftian cosmic horror, which is that the idea is that there are these that we don't fully understand reality and that we are just minuscule compared to the reality of the forces at work, and you can't beat them. This isn't a game where like I'm going to strap up with weapons and I will defeat Chaturga forever. It's just, can I close the portal before he comes through? And in, you know, 60 years or whenever the time is right and the stars align, he's going to try to come through again. And hopefully someone will remember the old ways, you know. So you jump around and you're a character whose grandfather has died. you're a young woman, but then you're going through all of his books where he's kept the secret history of this truth that there are these horrible outer gods and cults that have been passing through time. So you jump around from like Roman times to you play a firefighter in Iraq, an American firefighter, and you jump around all over time, piecing together these dark truths and these tools that you need. So it totally immerses you in the mood, and you get to play it and be it. But one of the inventions, and I think video games have done this now a bunch since, but I wasn't aware of it anything else at the time. You had a health meter and you had a sanity meter. That's the other big thing of like, monsters aren't just scary. They're so unnatural. They're so not what the world should be as you understand it, that it breaks you. When you see one of these monsters, and it's been a thing in Call of Cthulhu, the role playing game, forever. But this was in a video game. So like, okay, how does that manifest in a video game? Like, you start to lose your sanity and you're going around an old mansion trying to find hidden tunnels. And from somewhere you hear a phone ringing in the distance and a baby crying. And as it gets worse, sometimes you'll get slowly, slowly smaller. Or like you open a door and you think you opened it, but then you just see a flash of monsters and blood. And then you didn't go into the door. And the most infamous of these sanity effects as you lose sanity is there's one where the screen suddenly goes to blue and it says in a very convincing font, you did not save properly. Your game is lost. Absolutely crushing and shocking.
So I'm literally, as you're talking, I'm reading that. I looked up this game and Nintendo was worried that we can't have this. People are going to destroy their memory cards. This is fascinating to me.
It was so effective. It was very meta, but because it's the kind of thing of like you're gathering resources and you can use, you know, a spell to re-up your sanity. But like in my friends and I all had like a super busy summer of 2002, but we all went through the same experience of I can't stop playing this game. It's super hot and humid in Minneapolis that summer. So we're all playing it with the windows open and, you know, actual, you know, people yelling outside or a cat jumping in the window while you're playing this and your sanity's going down. You're just being like, I want to get through this game without having to stop and constantly re-up my sanity. So like, I can do it. I can do it. It's 2 a.m., but I can just keep listening to that baby cry. And you're in that mindset. And then it goes to the blue screen of death. And it tricked us all. It tricked us all. We had that moment where we believed it.
How long does it linger? Does it play with you long, or do you suddenly you're back in the game?
It wasn't too long, maybe a few seconds, and then it flashes back. Maybe you needed to hit a button. Just a bunch of great stuff like that. It was a great game. Then there were real complications. Then you can read it on Wikipedia with some of the creators. And unfortunately there was never a sequel, and it was Kickstarter for sequels and it never happened. So it was just a great, beautiful, amazing experience of being fully plunged into cosmic horror.
This is fantastic. And I remember in my early days of radio where we weren't allowed to put sirens in commercials. People would start pulling over. This is mind bending stuff here. No sequel, but is it a big part of it, a series before it?
I'm trying nope. to look this up. Nope. No. I think it was titled, you know, with some hubris, Sanity's Requiem, because there was that was the subtitle for the inevitable sequels, and they were inevitable.
Yeah, I love it. And this game affected you. It scared you. Did it have that kind of effect where if you're playing at 2 a.m., the crying baby would scare you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, because it was those things that just tapped into a deep, like, you can rationalize. Like, I'm playing a video game. It's not real. There isn't a real baby. And B, like, I know it's my sanity meter. But it's those things that, like, we're hardwired. That's a noise you want to address, even if you've never been a parent. It's hardwired to not just let that go on. And that's part of what was so successful about the game is you had those moments of triumph where you held back the darkness for now and fun Lovecraft pastiche, but it got under your skin and in that way that it's fun to be afraid. And it was terrifying, but fun.
I love this. This seems like a game that was ahead of its time.
I think so. And I think there's been a lot like it, and I'm so out of it. Souls something. I know that there's a really crushingly hard video game that's very much in the spirit of this that people love these days. And But for me, it was Eternal Darkness in the summer of 2002.
What I love about our choices here is we, of course, choosing things from our heart here and our own experiences. Every one of our entries here today probably has someone listening going, oh!
Right?
Oh! Yeah. Yeah. So we want you all to share those stories, of course. That's a great number four. Well, my number four isn't scary, Joseph. It can be if you fall off your skateboard because it's Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1. All right, 99 and 2000, and they re-released them last year or so. I have them. They are some of the best re-released, reimagined, reskinned games I think I've ever played because they're just like, hey, that game you love, here it is again. Just it looks a little better. And I love playing them. It can be a little frustrating. In my older age, I can't do the tricks as much as I could back then. In choosing games for this list, Joseph, I wanted to make sure to – there's some all-timers. There's some games I love that I play by myself. MLB The Show, great example of that. But a lot of why I love video games or why they rank high in my memories is the shared experience of not just playing them and then going to talk about them with friends at work or the bar or something like that. But for me, you know, having roommates, in early days in LA and all of us gathering around the one TV we all own collectively, we would have this shared experience in this community around it. And Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 in 1999, Pro Skater 1 in 1999 and 2 in 2000 was that, where, and we're not alone with this, where it was like, just like, coming home from work, my friends coming home from CalArts, and we'd all gather around, we'd order a pizza or make our own little cheap pastas and sit around and just play this for hours upon hours upon hours. And almost to the point of like, I don't remember much during that time other than this. like this was what it meant. And then 2 comes out and it's even better. And I was not a skater kid. I wanted to be. That's the run of I sold my Star Wars figures at a garage sale to buy a skateboard. And that lasted about 6 months. And I sold the skateboard to get a catcher's mitt. Like that was the about 6 months. I tried to be a skater kid. I had a skateboard. I had all the grip tape and all the stuff, and I couldn't do it. I'm not coordinated. I'm afraid of falling. So this game came out, and it was like, I know who Tony Hawk is. He's cool, but I'm not a skateboard. I didn't enjoy skating. And then my friend was like, just try. And yeah, I'd never put down the controller for like 2 months. So that's it. That's nothing more to say in the game. It's simple. Great soundtrack. Whether you like pop punk music or not, you like the soundtrack. I still hear the songs and I go right back to the hangar or the schoolyard or San Francisco. Like, and again, the re-release, which occasionally I'll stream the game so you all can watch me get mad trying to land a jump is fun. So that's why it's my number four.
Did playing it get to that point where you felt like you were flying? You felt like you were moving? Like it was freeing?
You got better. Yeah. And I'm not saying it was as deep as me finally landing in an ollie that I couldn't at nine. And that I was working through childhood broken dreams, but there was a little bit of that, And you got to choose your skater. I was a Bucky Lasik guy, and my friends, my roommates would have their own choices, and you could compete and you have fun and just the laughter and the crashing and, yeah, it was freeing. The value of the video games getting pulled into the world. Most of us are not going to go skating down like a Grand Canyon. You know, they were not going to do that. But you could. And it was just it was fun. And it's like a lot of video games. It's addictive because, you know, you get better and better and better. And once you pull off a move or your rail grind that goes for 20,000 points, you're like, now I can do it for 30.
What did you do today? I was rail grinding.
I was rail grinding.
That is great. I absolutely love that.
There you go. No other depth to that other than it's my skating dreams. And I still occasionally put it on and play here with the re-releases. All right. That is our number four choices, which means we're up to your number three choice. We're talking our favorite video games.
My number three is BioShock. I love everything about this.
This is great.
Except the name. I don't mind BioShock at all, but it was clearly like once you play the game, like, okay, I get it. But there was a marketing team involved. Anyway, that doesn't matter. I had been away from video games for some of the big games because I'd been real busy. Sarah and I were married at this point, and you know, when a new Zelda came came back out, came out, and I had the whatever Nintendo system it was at the time, because it's the one after the game, the Wii. Enjoyed the Wii Sports, and so but I had a Nintendo. I didn't have anything else at that point, and didn't want to, you know, desert Sarah too often, because my late night video game playing had done some damage to my previous relationship. So I finally got an Xbox and was able to catch up on some of the games that I had missed. And so I was playing again BioShock a couple of years after some other people and heard just like, you know, great things about it. I played Portal, I played Red Dead Redemption, I played BioShock, and love Red Dead, as you and I have talked about, but BioShock is the one that really grabbed me, because it was like kind of getting back into it and seeing how video games had advanced. And I loved BioShock because to me it was the perfect combination of video games as a narrative storytelling of incredibly powerful, thoughtful art of it is a story, but it is a story that has this other component of there's an additional power of you are not passively watching it. You are made to act it out. And BioShock makes the most of it by making that a video game about free will. And you end up in moments where you're making a choice where you probably don't want to, but you can't not, because you have to play the video game. So using the truth of what the medium is to help better tell the story and help make you feel the story. So it had all this like great depth. And then the other part of video games, which can be beautiful and fun and is powerful, is just the fantasy, the wish fulfillment, you know? I was never going to be a good skateboarder. I never played Tony Hawk, but I would have got that out of it of like, I can't rail grind in real life.
Yeah.
But I can rail grind here. Just like, hey, I can't fight cosmic deities or, you know, save Gorons in the real world, but I can here. There is a level of wish fulfillment. And sometimes that's just very direct. And the story of BioShock, of this city that broke away from the rest of civilization because they didn't want to follow any rules. They didn't want to be held back by any government regulations, so they can invent whatever they want. And it goes to hell, and there are these plasmids, or you can inject yourself with these powers and wrestle with all the moral and socio-political implications of that. And at the same time, then you're also like, yeah, I injected myself and now I can shoot bees out of my hand. And it's like we talk about with the galaxy far away, the absolute depth combined with just the that's cool power fantasy. And I just couldn't believe it. Cause if I could dream a video game, it would have been BioShock, to have that depth. And also like, there's some baddies around the corner. I'm going to shoot my bee hands and I don't even see them, but I hear them scream. Yeah. Beautiful power fantasy. I love BioShock.
This is another game that I've seen on the shelves, and I would love to analyze why I'm not drawn to these games as much as others. And you are, and all three of your games kind of have the same vibe in the terms of big, expansive stories, worlds you can climb into. And I love those kind of games too. My list will have those, but like, what draws you to these type of, they're cinematic, and there's no surprise that some of these have been close to being adapted or might still be adapted. I know the BioShock movie was out there, the Netflix film, all that kind of stuff that might come down the line. What draws you to that?
I think it's just, I want to be fully immersed. So I want it to be a world that is not my own. And then I think it is the wanting to play, not just to rack up the points. I've certainly become addicted to video games from just like, I want to level up. I want to medal, you know, in everything. And we'll talk about some other games that are, you know, a little like I had a big Mortal Kombat phase that really is just about like round after round of fighting. And that's fun too. But the games that hook me deep in my soul all go back to, I want to, I feel like there's an actual injustice, you know, and I want to set something right. Eternal Darkness was that way too, of like, I want to stop Jaturga or one of the other two elder gods. I want to stop them from coming through, because it's good writing, because like in Eternal Darkness and in BioShock, you're constantly being presented with the voices who tell you that you are wrong and you can't do the good thing you're trying to do. So it's not only like it's a part of a good storytelling because it's raising the stakes on you of like, I mean, I'm sure MLB The Show has this too, but like, you know, are there other managers in there who tell you like your team's going to lose? You all suck. You know, like that's the part of these power of these games of like you have these constant presence saying, no, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. So you're out there with your B hands going, yes, I can.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a GM rating system where you have a 3-year contract and you check in and will tell you your chances of being rehired low average rate. And I'm currently on low and I've been fired like the previous two teams that I was working for. So yes, you're told your decisions are wrong.
That's a pretty big no, you can't to be fired by the Dodgers or whatever.
Until you're fired by a video game, you don't know that's a weird gut punch. I can handle real life more than the Mets have not renewed your contract. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, fascinating. I'm totally get what you're saying. This is, like I said, cinematic's the only word that comes to mind because they truly are.
Yeah. And it is total immersion. I always liked things with this his own world. It's obviously why we love the galaxy and other in Lord of the Rings and things that are, you're visiting a world that is like other worlds, but nothing else is exactly that. BioShock nailed that world building of there's nothing else. There's many things similar, but there's nothing quite the same as BioShock.
You know, I know that they've talked about film adaptations. I'd like you to do the stage version. Can you do a theater version of this?
Oh, that would be very, very fun. Yeah. How do you do the bees? How do you do the bees? Yeah. So many fun. So many fun abilities in that game.
Well, that is a big number three, a very popular video game series that I'm sure a lot of people out there will have opinions of. My number three, I don't know if it's as popular. I think it's as known. And I think what it became more popular. But I'm going back to 1993. Commodore 64 had been put up on the shelf, Joseph. We were in the PC, straight up PC world. My dad at the time, and actually my dad, other than his phone, is a you never bring an Apple product into our house kind of guy. I don't know why, but he's also an engineer. He likes building computers and he's really good at that. So that's why. But anyways, we had a PC finally, home computer there in the mid-90s. And we, my dad and I, we got this game called SimCity 2000.
Wow.
So, SimCity 2000, as a lot of people know, is a city building simulator game. It had been a sequel to SimCity, which was a little bit different engine. We now had a different perspective. You were looking down, a more 3D feel. And yeah, you started in, I think, 1900, or you could choose 1900 or 1950. And you built up a city and you had to worry about all the utilities, the power, the police, the fire, the crime, the health, taxes, natural disasters, eventually alien invasions, all these kind of things. And you measured the city and you built it. And that was the game. And on the surface, I don't know, it seems pretty boring. This game in the summer of 93 into 94 and into my first year of college was a game I would start. You know, on Saturday or well, by the time I got to college, right? I didn't have classes on a Thursday. Thursday, 10 a.m. My dad would be coming home at 6 p.m. from work going, oh, you still playing? And I just would not know. And I don't know. I didn't want to grow up. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to be a city planner. There was a little phase where I was like, oh, being an architect sounds great to design houses. I had no skills in that. I didn't have my dad's CAD system drawing skills. I think it's going to the franchise mode idea. Someday, Joseph, you're going to have to sit in a bar and unlocking me why I like this franchise upper management position. I don't know what it is. And so now I'm jumping. I could almost include this game now. There's a version. It's not from the Sim brand, but it's called Pocket City. It's on my phone. And there's a new game, Pocket City 2. They did a revamped version where you can walk around the city that you build. And this is now, I haven't looked at like X or Threads or anything late night going to bed. Like we all do this doom scrolling before you sleep. I've been playing this building a city and it ties that back to SimCity 2000. And I know a lot of people know the game and I know it's pretty popular and the sounds of building, you know, you have to worry about electricity. So you're building power lines and they make this weird little sound every time you build them and you put down roads. The trees are popped, but you put these little trees down. I don't know, man, but I love it. And it's one of the greatest games of all time because of that, because I just was so pulled in that I couldn't get up from the chair.
Oh, I've never been fully immersed in Sims, but I've always wanted to be. I've talked to so many people who've had so much fun doing the more straightforward, just kind of guiding the individuals, mm-hmm. but also the big city building. Oh, if I had had that on a PC when I was the same age as you, that would have been game over.
Yeah.
I'd have been drawn in. I think SimCity has always seemed like really sneaky edutainment to me. Like if they had marketed it the wrong way, it would have been like, kids, learn about vital infrastructure, learn about life choices. Like it's just shy is my understanding of let's figure out how life works. But they pitched it right. So it never feels like that. I've never heard anybody say, it's kind of edutainment, but it feels like that's actually what the appeal is.
Well, yeah. And like third and fourth grade, I remember on our computers they had in the back of the class, we would play that lemonade game where you'd run a lemonade stand. So there you go. Learning the business capitalism and how to make money off lemonade. You're right. You could have gone that direction with it. And who knows, maybe some people did use it. And again, there's some valuable skills to learn in all this and how it all works, how city government works, because that kind of stuff shows up. Even working in malls. Malls are tiny cities. You got the mayor, you got the police, you got the utilities workers. It's all the same.
You got to put the Cinnabon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I never have gone on to Sims. Where it obviously it's a little bit more of an individual level and you're managing people. And I never touched it because I was like, you got to worry about people. No, I want to worry about infrastructure.
That's what the kids love these days. Skateboards and infrastructure.
So there you go. There you go. That's my number three choice. All you SimCity heads out there. I know you are. And one of my favorite things to do, I did it in researching for, cause I was like, when did that game come out on YouTube? Yeah. Everything's on YouTube. I know. There's just people have video footage of them playing the game and that's all it is. And I've just sat there watching it this morning, 20 minutes of guy just building the city, me going, yep. Interesting decision. Oh, I didn't do that. Okay. There you go. All right. That's my number three choice, but we're going to take a quick break right now and come back with our top two choices each. This is a Other Center Life Rank edition. And Joseph and I are talking about our favorite video games. More after this.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Other Center. I'm Ken Napsok. That's Joseph Grimshaw. We've got a list of video games in front of us, and we are talking about our favorites. Yeah, we try to not do honorable mentions, but I have a long list that we'll do. Maybe that's part two. Joseph. GTA 2, WCW versus NWO, NWO, Myst, Command & Conquer. Those are some other choices, but they're not on the list. Joseph, what are your choices here for number two, actually, for you?
Well, it's not Mortal Kombat or Resident Evil 4. There's several other video games that I would sneak into my honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it. I got a Resident Evil 4 story that I'm ashamed of that I got to share sometime. Anyway, my number two is where the list starts to diverge a little bit from, I didn't even think about it because I put this list together fast and from the heart. And mm-hmm. You're right, the first three are epic, cinematic, a hero rises in a dark time. And this is a video game that came to mean everything to me. And a friend gave it to me for Christmas in the year 2001. And I could tell by the shape, it's a video game. This is my video game buddy. Oh, what video game did he get me? And when I opened it, I was like, and I felt real guilty, you know, but I was like, okay, well, this isn't my kind of game. So I guess I'll give it a try and maybe it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Fool. Mm-hmm. The video game was Super Smash Melee. Many good Super Smash games. This is the 2001 for the GameCube. My brother and I had played, you know, video games together, but we never really had a large community. By this time, I had, you know, a bunch of good friends from comedy and from other parts of life, and they were really, at that point, they were really my found family, and I really thought of them that way. They're like, this is my found family. And we do a lot of things together and we make time for it. We have all these parties that we do that's kind of our holidays. It's like, well, bar crawl is a holiday for me. That's what I do, you know, with my found mm-hmm. family. And not only did I enjoy Super Smash much more than I thought I was going to just playing by myself, the huge thing is it became a thing for our little found family community. So I'm mm-hmm. sure most people know Super Smash, but if you don't, it was Nintendo being like, well, what if we just take a lot of the characters that we created or we have the rights to and make it kind of like a Nintendo-ized Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, where it's pretty much, you know, kind of mostly 2D side-scroller. You're on a level and you got your different moves and your characters have their signature moves and you beat the crap out of each other, but with this Nintendo flair. And I think that's part of it. It's like, I played Super Mario, I played Donkey Kong, I love Legend of Zelda, but like, I don't know, Kirby, I don't know, Yoshi, I don't know. Like, I was still in the point where it's like, I like things a little bit darker and edgier. And it's like, I don't know, this is kind of cute and bright.
Yeah.
And then just the absolute bonkersness of it just drew me in. Like I said, it became a real social thing where... I was talking on a recent episode about the comedy variety show that we did every month, Look Mono Pants, which in 2001, I believe the show started at 11:30, usually ran 2 hours. And then we'd do the after party. So we'd hang out and have pizza and drinks and probably starting at about 2 a.m. Like five or six of us would kind of look at each other and go, Super Smash. And we would play until the dawn. And it became this refrain. And I know this is one of those things that people are not in their heads, because a ton of people have had experiences like that, where it'd be like that. One more game. one more game. Okay. Everybody's like, one more game. And it was a joke. It was a joke. We'd play the first game and be like, all right, one more game. And then it would get down to like, this is harmful. We're all just, you know, glassy eyed, fighting on autopilot. Like, one more game.
I got to go. No, one more. Can't go.
One more. Yeah. And people who played Super Smash probably know there was a C-stick on the GameCube controller, and there was this beautiful finesse to powering up a big hit, to timing it just right so you didn't leave yourself open. And so your friend walked into a big punch from Donkey Kong or a big slice from Link. But you could hit the C-stick and it would do it fast. And my friend group were like, yeah, that's cheap. No C-sticking. And then we had one friend who was like, what? It's built into the game. Why is it there if you can't use it? It's totally valid. It's not a cheat code. You can do it. And so we had this ongoing thing. Like I made him a mug for the holidays with his favorite character, Marth. I painted Marth on the mug. And then in the bottom of the mug, I wrote C sticker. And it became like a swear word for somebody who took the cheap and easy way. Like, that guy just C sticked that. Like, didn't take any time, just the fast, easy route, and then patted himself on the back. Even C sticker. Like, so it was that thing where the game was beautiful, but it was the culture.
Yeah. Oh no, this is wonderful. I didn't play this one. And I do like the Mortal Kombat games. I think I played more of them at the arcades, at the theater that was in our town local. So I didn't take a lot of those home, unfortunately, because I passed by WCW versus NWO, which is a Nintendo 64 pro wrestling game. That's what it was. What you're describing of like, We're gonna get a bunch of Chips Ahoy, some caffeine soda. Yeah, we didn't even know this was college age. I didn't, you know. Technically, I guess couldn't drink at 18, 19, but I wasn't a drinker. Didn't do drugs. I was a good little two shoes kid who just wanted to have a sugar overload and play these fighting games with his friends. And that's exactly what you're describing. I love that. The 2 a.m. I'm shutting down. But one more. That's what makes these games just stand the test of time.
Just so great. And we got so used to it and so deep into it. Like other friends would watch and be like, how can you even tell what's happening on screen? And anytime something super weird happened, they'd be like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, it's a Pokemon. Because that was one of the things is you could throw the Pokemon balls were one of the many things you could throw. And then they would explode and a weird Pokemon would burst out and do something to the screen. And it would just be glassy eyed zombies being like, that's a Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Anything weird is a Pokemon.
Anything weird.
Final thing I'll say for anybody who didn't play it. Link from Legend of Zelda was my main, as they say, that I got really good at, to the point where there was at some point where somebody was like new to it. And like, can you explain to me how you do that? And it's like, I can't anymore. I used to know the buttons. I used to know it was down B, but now it's like asking me to explain walking or how do you breathe? Like that level of into it. And one of the things that I deeply loved about the game is it had that sense of fun and sense of wackiness of you had your damage percentage and you could go beyond 100%. And the more damaged you got, the deeper red it got. And then when you finally got hit, everything is about being knocked off the platform. Mm. So you could get yourself up to like 800%. Deep blood crimson damaged, and then somebody would just like blow a kiss at you and your character could be like and fly off the screen as fast as humanly possible. So you'd find those levels where it was hard to get knocked off the level, where you could bounce around and get each other up to the highest possible damage, and then a little boop and just scream off screen. So funny.
When's the last time you visited this game? Has there been any updated versions that are still this version or your favorite version?
Yeah, there was Super Smash Brawl for the Wii, and we played that for a little while. But you know, people's lives were changing, and it wasn't as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. We did play that one for a while. There's been many since. But it was Melee, that one. The last time I believe was 2012. It was a reward for a Kickstarter I had done in 2012 of if you donate at this level, I'll play Super Smash with you. Mm-hmm. And one of my old Super Smash buddies is like, he very generously donated a lot of money so we would make time to play Super Smash again about, 10 years after the prime of us playing it. And that was the last time.
Yeah, it's also sad when the moment passes. When Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 came out, all of us were like, not anymore.
Right? And it's just life, right? It isn't like
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that game anymore, right? It's people moving on, different things happening. Yeah.
It's crazy. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to fire that up one day when somehow, some way.
I think we're close to it. Yeah. Cause I got together with when I was in Minneapolis earlier this summer and I played a board game with some of these friends. And one of my friends was like, and then after this, we're going to play Super Smash till 2 a.m. Right. And we all kind of laughed. We all kind of looked at each other like, maybe, maybe one of these days.
Love that. Love that. Great number two. Great number two.
Yeah. What's yours?
Controversial is what it is, Joseph. It's controversial. I'm not just sneaking in honorable mentions, but I had this spot blank and I was like, what are some of the great games of my time? And I was going to go with the Commodore 64 game I've mentioned before called Project Space Station, which is just a game from 87, which you manage NASA's space program and you launch satellite, you hire scientists. And I was like, I'm just picking the same game over and over, franchise. I got to do something a little different. And it's a game that, I'm going to say it, and everyone listening, and even you might have a reaction. And my number two choice is Fortnite. There we go. Some groans, some question marks. I know that the game might not be cool anymore. It might be recool. It might come back again. I don't know. I don't care. I did start playing it when I started Twitch streaming after I got laid off from Collider, looking for income and things to do and content to create. I started streaming games and I started playing this Fortnite everyone was talking about. And I had a lot of fun with it. I couldn't do some of the building stuff that's needed. And I don't know. And I just kind of I just stopped. And time flies, but a year or so ago now, our buddy Ken Plume from Force 5 on YouTube, he'll deny it. He absolutely peer pressured me. He bludgeoned me over there until I played with him. And I have not stopped since. I play every day, unless I'm on vacation. Half hour, sometimes too long. I've gotten a little better at that. So again, a lot of thoughts on the game. I am not one that thinks violence in video games or rock and or roll music leads directly to some of the ills of society. I think there's a bigger conversation. There's parts of this game. My niece plays it. She's about 10 and I played one time with her. I was like, ah, we're trying to reconnect a little bit. I don't talk to my sister as much anymore. And I say, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, she plays Fortnite. I do. And we played and I don't know if I loved my 10 year old niece saying, oh, are you using the assault rifle or the shotgun? Like there were some things that, I might take some issue with it. I get that. I get all that. But much like you said about an earlier choice, Joseph, we can have those other conversations at another time.
Yes.
But the game is bleeping fun. The game is addictive to a dangerous level. They removed the mode I play. I don't have to worry about building because I'm not a 10-year-old with those skills. I'm an old school video gamer and I need it to be a little slower. And then I stream it, but also I play by myself. And because you can play with friends, that feeling you're talking about, and I don't want to try to say that you even need to recapture that feeling of playing with your friends in college till 2 a.m. But there is a sense of community, a sense of kinship that happens because of Mr. Plume. I play with him online. I play with our buddy Lauren Romo, the Galactic Podcast. Hal Lublin, your friend of mine. Brian Ward occasionally swings by. My friend Brian Tiller, who a listener of the show, also working on songs with me. We play and we hang out and we talk and we chat and we jib back and forth and jab back and forth and we hang out and we play some other people that I've met through them that are really fun to play with. And then we'll go online and play with it too. One of our listeners, a wonderful character named Ranger Donald, he plays with us online too. And I never want to say you need to play a game, Joseph. I will say two things. One, there's supposedly a rumor that Doctor Who characters are coming to the game.
Oh.
And there you go. And two, your love of themes and the thematic elements of story, our own personal thematic elements that bleed out from us into our actions, choices, and words, your head might explode. When you play in a team, trios, or squad mode, who you are as an individual shows up in the game. Are you a camper who likes to hide in a bush, work your way around obstacles and confrontation? Are you someone who runs and jumps into problems? Are you someone who leaps before you look? It's all on display. And you're all, especially when you play in squads, which is up to four people. It's never not interesting to me to see how people play, what they do, how you win, how you lose. And the action's pretty silly. And it's also a pretty silly game. And sometimes I think I just need that. So outside of, yep, the violence, but guess what? I've grown up with video game violence for 40 years now. I don't go out into the street and do it, but again, bigger conversation. So I can separate myself from it. I know maybe I can't, but it's you talk about turn off your mind, relax and float downstream. I just have a blast. And I sometimes, if I do go a couple of days because I'm busy or traveling, I just miss sitting down and being knowing that none of this matters. All that matters is the connections I've made or the fun I'm having in this moment. And that makes the game valuable to me. I'm able to truly relax.
Yeah. No, I totally get the caveats you're saying about, you know, the violence, or like sometimes even for me with video games, it's the sort of like the go. It can get you in this kind of, you know, headspace where you're kind of getting, you can have fun, relax, or sometimes you can, I can get too. I had a day where I was playing Battlefront and then I was realized like I'm driving recklessly because I'm too rattled from my own anger at Battlefront. I can't drive like I'm trying to beat Kylo Ren on Cloud City. Calm down.
I've done the play Gran Turismo 4 and then get in my car and go, oops, better pull up.
Yep. So I do get those caveats, but what's coming out is this just kind of classic timeless tale of what's something that a bunch of friends can do together. You know, you're describing playing poker or having a book club or a knitting circle of like, it's a structure. It's a reason we do love the thing, but the thing is also just what's bringing us together to have this moment of community and be together and shape the way we spend some time together.
I think that's exactly it. And I think at times I'd rather be in a knitting group with Roman Howe and the gang, but no, it's a feeling. And there's time. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, because sometimes I'll get a text from Ken. Hey, Hal and I are online. You want to play? And it's like, what? Yeah. Well, I have responsibilities. Let me throw them aside because I need a half hour with these guys. and it's fun.
Yeah. And I mean, in the height of my video game playing, late 90s, early to mid 2000s, that is what it was, is what I did with my friends. It had a great power to it. It was community. It was culture. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I love what you're saying about understanding people's psychology. I have one good friend who is incredibly detail oriented. And one of the last times I tried to recapture former glory, like he had gotten Resident Evil, I believe 5. And it had a co-op mode. We used to do co-op modes together. And so I drove to his house. I'm like, all right, we've only got about 3 hours because we've got all these adult responsibilities. And he spent the entire 3 hours setting up his character and his kit.
Yeah.
And you're like,
this
is the truth of who my friend is.
It's great. I've learned a lot about Plume over these years. I've learned a lot about myself playing this game. It's been very fun. Very fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my number two choice, Fortnite. Yep. I selected that one, but we are now up to our number one choices. These are favorite video games, the best video games of all time. I don't know. According to us, maybe they are, but we're going to go to my number one choice. So Joseph can close out the show with his number one. And I made a reference joke in an email to you, Joseph, where it's like, I think I legally have to pick this game, my number one choice. So therefore it is Red Dead Redemption 2. Oh, I do love the first one. Oh my God. The first one, which is a powerful story about family and rediscovering family. Red Dead Redemption 2 is about the loss of family and what causes that and what causes people to change and break apart. And that's just the surface themes. I always joke, but I mean it in a weird way. Red Dead Redemption 2 might be my favorite movie of all time. It is an achievement in a lot of ways in terms of open world, how the game looks and feels. And yeah, eventually things will surpass it in terms of the look, feel, and all that stuff. But I love it. And it's not for everyone if you're not a fan of the Old West or that kind of stuff. But that's one of the things I love, Red Dead Redemption 2 specifically. And I remember having a conversation with you and Mike Black offline, because Black and I are big fans of the game. And we were trying to we knew you played the first one, but we're like, you need to fire up the old PS4 and get this one. the story is an important story. This game actually, I just say it directly, it affected me in a way as I was going through some of my own changes. And how I look at the world, how I look at the world politically and socially, and who am I, and how do I fit into all this, and how do I fight change? No, I don't want to fight change. I want to be part of change. All those things, there's some moments in this game that actually affected me on that journey. I'm not saying it changed me and I turned off the PS4 and went, I'm a different person now. But there's a lot of real history. They deal with the actual history of the Old West, the 1800s into the early 1900s. It is the story of change, the story of progress and what that does and how people either survive, thrive, or shrink from that, and how you adjust what you're trying to accomplish. It is about power. It is about freedoms. It is about who we really are. And there are, in this game that's a shoot 'em up Western-style game, it's got some really, really in-your-face thoughts about masculinity, toxic masculinity, what that is, who we are, how women were treated, how Native people were treated, how what the Army, the U.S. Army, the government's role in that. All these things that, yes, over these times, as history is recontextualized, we're understanding that more. We're understanding that how the West was one story told in the movies and the stories wasn't necessarily accurate or true. Mm-hmm. This game deals with that in a way that I think the first game started to, was there for, but this game almost, and I was even this morning looking at notes, I no one's saying this explicitly, but the game almost felt like it had a responsibility to do this a little better. And I think it did. Race relations, economic reasons. And one of the big moments, what I was talking about earlier, is I believe in progress. I believe in bigger cities and industry and all those kind of things. I was having this discussion, actually debate recently about the 1950s and the freeway expansion and the things we needed to do, but the ways we did it was maybe wrong. And I've more at that point now, because there's a moment where you're heading into one of the big cities, Saint-Denis, and you're looking at the industry that's emerging and these smoke stacks blowing this black billowing smoke into the world. And you're seeing what's happening and you're seeing the barons, the titans of industry who are the enemies in this game. And you've just been walking around a beautiful plain with animals and small communities and towns. And I'm not saying it all had to stay that way, that we shouldn't have developed the car and the train and the plane. I do believe in progress, but I looked at it in a way I'd never seen before, where this beautiful world I've been walking around now had smoke billowing through it. Why? Because someone had money, not because they were advancing to society versus technology versus industry. They were advancing it for their own power. And you just start to see it in a way. And it's and then there's the interpersonal story between Arthur Morgan and John Marston and Dutch Vanderlyn and all these characters. And at one point, for those who still haven't played it, I won't spoil it, towards the end of the game, a lot of people know the moment I talk about. I was bawling as I'm playing this part and I'm crying and moved by this story. I was so effectively pulled in, and other games maybe do that for other people, but this was my game. That's why this will always be, until it's toppled probably by Red Dead Redemption 3. If that ever happens, this will be my favorite game of all time.
Well, my main reaction is that I think Next Life Ranked, you should actually end one of the ranked episodes. That is a great, great insight. And I really relate, respond to a lot of that. I think for me, a real growth moment period is realizing that kind of some people explicitly and other things just sort of through osmosis. I got the message that the way we've progressed as humans is, there was an idea and then there was a better idea. So everybody did it that way. Progress. You learn actual history. It's like, usually is some greedy rich person trying to get richer and someone got real hurt along the way when maybe they didn't have to. And dealing with that, honestly, and dealing with that in a place where this is the way, manifest destiny. It's meant, we're meant to be here. And this is meant to happen this way. Versus we all have choices, you know, of how we relate to one another. And anyway, could go on and on. The first Red Dead, I was devastated by the ending. So upping the emotional stakes from Red Dead Redemption, I don't know if I could even handle. So this is definitely on my list to play, because I loved the first one.
Then we'll do another center on it. I'll replay the story. I'll replay and go through it. I've actually been meaning to do that. I just know that I'll lose a year of my life if I do that. It's valuable for the reason. And also a reminder, a lot of stuff we're talking about, especially some of the more story-based games you're talking about, how I think that stigma still exists of, video games. You're dropping a quarter into a machine, mindlessly throwing away your life. And that was kind of what was the feeling in the 80s. And it's a medium. It's an art form. And there's silly games and there's, you know, phone games that are pretty dumb, but they keep your attention, that are designed to, and all those kind of things. And there's arcade games. But there's this is an art form. This is truly stories being told in this form. And I love it.
Yeah, and there's a reason that those games make a bonkers amount of money and affect the culture. And, you know, look at things like The Last of Us, and, you know, which I haven't played, but I watched the show. And they're powerful and they're here to stay.
Yeah. Well, that is my number one choice, but that's not the end of the show. And your choice is spectacular and a great way to end the show. What is your number one video game of all time? This is the definitive list. No one can argue with it.
Well, my number one, I think, is probably other people's number ones. And I fully also acknowledge that some people are also going to be like, yeah, we know it was good, but can we please stop hearing about it? But I have to be honest.
We understand. Yeah.
Yep. Grandpa, that was a good time. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You rolled the trolley and comic books were two pennies. I get it. But it has to be the most phenomenal video game experience for me is GoldenEye for the N64. There's a ton written about this video game. I have a GoldenEye book that I can't wait to crack open. Mm-hmm. But for me, going through some of my reactions in order, talked about James Bond on my Obsessed podcast. Definitely it's come up here on Four Center. Maybe we'll do some other Center episodes. Don't really want to cover the movies right now, but I'm a big fan of the books. That's where it started for me, honestly, in a lot of ways. And part of the books are thrillers about a complicated, flawed person. The first one is the first paragraph of the first book is a depiction of misery, of how gross it is to be in a casino when everything is smoke and sweat and desperation. And then the movies come along and even the books become more fantastic and thrilling and more over the top. And that's a part of the fun tension of James Bond, is it's this thriller that also has gadgets for the kids. But a part of the appeal is this desire to be like James Bond. And one of the things that attracted me to James Bond was he was like, I understood, and technically we're both human men, but that appears to be where the similarities end, you know, geeky and scrawny and, you know, too young to be good with women, but, you know, too young to order a martini in a cool way, but like all of these sort of impossible things he is. So this, you know, this inbuilt desire to make, can I even be a little bit like him? And that's what the appeal of some video games are, you know, based on any sort of IP of like, you get to be like, you are 007. Like, well, that's kind of like going back to, you know, Kennedy, JFK is the one who the books were popular, but he exploded them in an interview by saying the fifth novel in series, From Rush With Love, is what he's reading and he loves it. Even JFK wanted to be James Bond, you know? So that was like a huge part of the appeal. And this is so early in the 3D revolution, you know, the PlayStation 1 had gotten into it, but the N64 really stamped, the 3D experience. And it was so well made that games after it, and I played all the other Bond games for many years, and some of them are in my runners up, but they always struggled to make the finesse with which you could aim. And I couldn't believe that I get to be James Bond. I'm on a cool mission. I can switch out all these different weapons, but if I've got my little pistol with a silencer on and there's a guard facing the other way, I can aim and I can shoot him just in the hand, you know, get this weird early graphics blood splotch and he'll just go, shake his hand, you know, or you start to use that tactically of like, I can't, you know, there's too many guards running at me and I can't take them all out. But if I, you know, get them all in the foot, they'll stumble a little bit and they'll buy me a second of time. That, and I'm sure people listening now, this is a real okay grandpa moment. but that was beyond what I could dream a video game could be, that level of finesse. And they actually did fail to to get it back for quite a while. Yeah. That level of specificity of aim and finesse and intelligence of the enemies to react to the choices that you've made. So it was living out multiple layers of fantasy of being James Bond and of a video game with this much finesse. And that, of course, was just the single player, which I loved.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the video games that is famous for creating the multiplayer experience. And I love the first player experience. If there was no multiplayer, GoldenEye would be my number one video game. Mm-hmm. But then you put that experience that so many people of different ages have had with GoldenEye, but then with other ones. But pizza and Coke or pizza and a beer. And then, you know, at the time it was four buddies and you run around and, you know, it's everybody wants to be odd job. Try to you know, throw your hat into your friend's crotch.
No odd job. Yeah.
No odd job. Like, yeah. And the infamous slappers only where, you know, in the video game it's supposed to be karate chop, but like you're just running around going pew, 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 trying to smack each other. The levels were super accurate to the movie, not just amazing. GoldenEye,
yeah.
But also to other, you know, in some of the bonus unlockable things, like that's the hangar from Moonraker. That mm-hmm. is the Moonraker. That level of accuracy I hadn't experienced too. Mm-hmm. The music was phenomenal. So it got everything, it hit every sweet spot of what a video game could be, single player mm-hmm. and multiplayer. We were doing a show in 99, is when myself and my brother and my good friend Timmy Wren and a couple other people, we put in the program under the special thanks, no thanks to GoldenEye, because we would get together to work on the show and we just wouldn't. And we ran into trouble because we couldn't stop playing GoldenEye. Yeah. It was so fun and so beautiful.
Well, this is a great way to end the show, man, because this is everything you're saying. You're describing this a game that I don't think time has lessened its impact.
No,
but to be clear, like this was a game changer across the board in so many ways, including what you're talking about of make sure you got four controllers because you're going over to Blair's house and you're going to play this for hours. And, you know, it becomes part of our lexicon. If I walk a certain group of friends or certain age group, if I say proxy mines, everyone knows what you're going to. Everyone knows. And the single player mode is actually really good. And there's something about you're right of so many great games have come since then. But a lot of games, and even something like Red Dead, I think are measured by this game, both in the mm-hmm. single and multiplayer. And that's how great it is. There's a reason. There's a reason it is what it is. And it was something special, man. It was something special. I just remember my mind being blown, but then my mind being frustrated because my friend kept slapping me to death. And,
Yeah. And like even the missions, I think that's what was so immersive about it is, you know, compared to modern video games where you can do 8 million things and hack puzzles and open mm-hmm. world mm-hmm. and you can cook and, you know, endless amount of things you could do. But, you know, coming from the world of side scrollers where it's like, you could jump, maybe duck, maybe shoot.
Yeah.
And maybe dodge, maybe weave, whatever. That's about it. And you get this mission briefing that's, you know, like hack the server and like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. It's jump, dodge, or shoot. How do I hack a server? It was so, and you know, of course it was just, you know, you walk up to it and then it gives you a button to hit. So it wasn't any big deal, but it made you feel mm-hmm. like it was so much more expansive than it had been. And the other thing is it was truly escalating so well in the difficulty levels where mm-hmm. by the time I'd been playing for a while, I would on the lowest difficulty level, if I had an hour to spare, I'd speed run the game. And then I only beat it on the hardest difficulty once. And that's only because Trevelyan accidentally blew himself up. It was a problem with the code.
Yeah.
I never legitimately beat it. It was that difficult. So endless fun. Final thing I'll say, I'm looking forward to reading this book. I know a little bit about the history of GoldenEye. I got this book about the entire history of it. But one of the other things that makes it powerful is it's another one of these great stories where this was created by younger people who didn't entirely know what they're doing, just making what they wanted to see. So I think they broke some rules. And I always love those stories of we made it really cool because we didn't know we weren't supposed to do it that way.
I love that.
Yeah.
I got to read that book. I got to get that book. I'm obsessed with that. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, I'll share it with you.
Love that. Ah, wonderful. And I like I said, got that 64 fired up. I think I don't remember if I still have my copy. I think at one time on a podcast, I said, oh, I still got a copy. And then I couldn't find it. And I was heartbroken because it's not cheap to get.
I have my copy by my bed. I know exactly where it is.
Right. Well, get some Chips Ahoy, some lemonade. Let's fire this up.
Sounds good.
That's good. Well, there you have it, my friends. Supersized edition. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah.
We had a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. And we know that you have your own thoughts. So if you're in our Discord, please share your favorite video games of all time. The ones that mattered, the ones that affected you, the ones that inspired your own stories. And if online, you can do that as well. I'll tell you where you can find us. Of course, we are Force Center Pod. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Threads at Force Center Pod as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Instagram and YouTube podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center and patreon.com/Force Center is where you can support us directly. We'd really appreciate that as it helps the show. You can find me at Ken Napsok or KenNapsok.com for more information. And Joseph, where can they find you?
You can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. The social media have become too many to list, so especially on a longer episode. So wherever you are, come find me there. And if you happen to be in Portland and want to see the short film I was working on, it's called The Narrator. It is starring Phil Amar, and it is playing this weekend.
There you go, my friends. All right, go play your games and tell us all about it. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.